Well, hello, everyone. This is Tammy Johnson, the Director of Strategic Partnerships at the Applied Research Center. Welcome, all of you, to the Compact for Racial Justice Forum call on race and review of the first 100 days of the Obama administration, 99 days in. Before we get started, I want to just note a few things in terms of just some general housekeeping. First, this call is being recorded for ARC's use and for the use of other media outlets. A recording of this call will be posted to our 100-day race and review webpage at ARC.org. Also, although this is not a formal press call, I do want to welcome members of the media and the blogosphere to our forum today. And finally, we're asking participants to direct their questions to us via email. Send us your name, your organizational affiliation, if that's applicable, and the question you'd like to ask to compact@arc.org. That's compact@arc.org. For those of you who are unfamiliar with us at the Applied Research Center, we are a national racial justice think tank that bridges policy research, media advocacy, and community activism. 10 days after the historical election of Barack Obama to the presidency of the United States, ARC released the Compact for Racial Justice. The Compact is an agenda for fairness and unity that offers concrete strategies that will move our society towards full equity, inclusion, and dignity for all people. It specifically called on the Obama administration to focus on the strengthening of the role of the Office of Civil Rights, the use of racial impact statements for major policy initiatives, and placing immigration reform policy squarely back on the public table for discussion. Through these compact forum calls, we have moved the national discussion about race and the economy, race and jobs, race and health care, immigration, and civil rights. We have noted, and we noted that even though it's been just 100 days, there's been a great deal that has happened. There have been highs and lows in this time period, from the inclusion of children in the passes of SCHIP, of immigrant children in the passes of SCHIP, to the U.S. boycott on the UN Conference Against Racism. And you can review our assessment of the first 100 days at our race and review page at ARC.org. And at this point, I really want to take the time to thank all of you, the forum participants, for contributing your voice to this discussion. It's been very important to us. In a recent ARC survey of Compact participants, we asked which best describes your overall assessment of how racial equity has been addressed during these first 100 days of the Obama administration. The majority of you responded that you were both pleased and a little disappointed, depending on the issue, listing education and employment as priority issues, and immigration being the number one issue for those who are under 30. So if we approach the 100-day mark of the Obama administration, we have to ask the question, did President Obama push for justice for all? Were there just justice for some? Was justice flatly denied? Or is it too early to make the call? So I want to start the call today. We're going to have a little bit of a different format for our call today, where we will, instead of having formal presentations from our speakers, we will have some Q&A immediately back and forth, starting with me and then with our participants. And so, again, you send your questions to compact@arc.org. Our speakers today include Deepa Iyer, who is the Executive Director of South Asian Americans Leading Together, known as SALT. She's an attorney by training and has worked as a staff attorney at the Asian American Justice Center and as a legal director at the Asian Pacific American Legal Resource Center. Deepa has also served as a trial attorney at the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice, where she's worked closely on initiatives to address post-9/11 backlash discrimination. Through her work over the past 10 years, Deepa has advocated for effective policies and practices around language access, civil rights, immigration, and voting rights. Tarsa Luis Ramos is the Director of Research at the Political Research Associates, an independent nonprofit progressive research center for activists defending democracy, building equality, and challenging bigotry and oppression promoted by sectors of the political right. Tarso has been a researcher and a writer on right-wing groups since 1991, and as director of the Wise Youth Public Exposure Project, he led efforts to counteract anti-union and environmental campaigns in the Western states. From 2000 to 2005, he directed Western State Center's Racial Justice Program, which resists racist policy initiatives and supports the base-building work of progressive people of color-led organizations. Angela Glover Blackwell is the founder and CEO of PolicyLink, an organization that advances economic and social equity in America. A renowned community-building advocate, Ms. Blackwell has contributed to Change for America, a progressive, printer is not working, a progressive blueprint for the 44th president, and the best-selling Covenant with Black America and Ending Poverty in America, How to Restore the American Dream. She's also a regular commentator on Public Radio's Marketplace and the Tavis Smiley Show. So again, we're going to start with some Q&A from me, and you should go ahead and email your questions to contact@arc.org. Mm-hmm. And I want to start right off with a round robin with the question, when it comes to issues of racial equity, and that means addressing the needs of people of color in the U.S., what was the high point of this first 100 days? And let's start with you, Deepa.
Sure. Thank you so much, Tammy, for inviting me to be part of this conversation. And I'll just start off by taking my cue from a national conference that SALT convened over the last few days here in D.C., where we had community-based organizations and advocates from around the country come together, and we did talk a little bit about looking at the past 100 days. So when it comes to high points, I'd point out a few specific ones. Obviously, you mentioned SCHIP, but also signing the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, the interest that we saw from the administration in terms of opening and moving forward a dialogue on immigration reform, as well as Secretary Napolitano beginning a review process of various enforcement measures within the Department of Homeland Security. Third, high point I'd mention is the diversity of appointments that we saw at high levels within the administration of people who are connected to our communities and who are cognizant of the importance of racial equity. And finally, I'd also add to this list some of the tone setters that we saw from the administration in terms of reaching out to other nations, including the Muslim world. So those are a few specific highlights that I would begin by mentioning.
This is Tarso Ramos, and that's a wonderful list, Deepa, and I would only add a couple of things to that. One is the second, Deepa's mentioning of some of the most significant appointments that have happened, such as Hilda Solis at Labor, Van Jones as Green Jobs Advisor. I think that these are very significant, although at this point they are significant in their potential mostly. And so back to your original set of questions, Tammy, there are many questions here that are one's tempted to say it's a little too early to say what the record of the Obama administration will be, but there are at least some positive signs. One of the main questions that I have coming into a discussion like this is, what do we define as racial justice goals or victories? In general, and particularly in the context of an administration that shies away from that kind of framing. But I would add to Deepa's list also the closing or the order to close Guantanamo Bay detention centers on the island of Cuba is extremely significant in terms of what it projects to the rest of the world in terms of the United States' commitments around racial justice, as well as what it signals in terms of a shift in foreign policy that has been very aggressive and arguably racist in terms of its targets as well.
This is Angela Blackwell. My colleagues have just put out a wonderful list, so I won't repeat, just embrace the things that they have said that they thought were good. But I want to take us up a level. If we're talking about 100 days, I guess that must start with the inauguration on January 20th. And that was extraordinary, and right after, things got more extraordinary as we saw that the new president actually intended to be a hard worker, wanted to work on the tough issues, and wanted to try to struggle in a way that both was open, allowing for lots of voices, and bringing in people who had some track record of working on issues on their own. Some of them have already been mentioned. I also think that the thing that has been most exciting during this 100 days for people who care about racial equity is the accessibility of the people who have been brought in, particularly in the White House. Melanie Barnes, running the White House Office on Urban Policy, has been extraordinary in the way that she has been willing to show up and invite others into the office. The starting of the White House Office for Urban Affairs, very important, particularly for people who are living in cities where so much of our communities of color is concentrated, to have that office started and to see the kind of questions that they're asking. The director of policy for the office is a man named Derek Douglas, who really has been reaching out broadly to get lots of views. In addition, the stimulus and the recovery package, while it doesn't include everything that we would want, some of it is targeted directly at communities of color that are some of the poorest in America in terms of the safety net provisions that were put in there, strengthening TANF and food stamps, but also for people who go to work every day and are still poor, the strengthening of the earned income tax credit and those kinds of things really make a difference in communities of color. So all in all, I think that these first 100 days have been pretty amazing for people who have been long forgotten and not having seen anything come out of Washington or the White House that seemed to have their concerns in mind at all.
Well, I guess I would only add the refocus of away from the drug war to treatment is really a huge step in terms of really getting at some root problems and not racially profiling and targeting communities of color. That is more than just symbolic. That's very meaningful. And particularly the appointment of Eric Holder and him standing up and really challenging us all about race in a very direct manner, you know, that cannot be missed. And I think we have some things to look forward to out of the Department of Justice as a result. At least I hope so. So let's turn this around and talk about what have been some challenging things that we've seen in terms of the first 100 days, some things that really wave a flag for us that we're going to have to be very vigilant about.
Well, I'll start there because I think that it really is too soon to say that things have gone wrong, but I do think that it's clear that if people of color want to have this administration focus on the things that are most important in communities of color, they have to be engaged. They have to make some noise. They have to be active. This has to be a two-way street, that we want the new administration to take the initiative, to do the right thing, to be outspoken in the right areas. But we need to speak up, and we need to speak up in a united way. And so one of the things that I worry about in this first 100 days is that communities of color have not been visible and organized enough to be able to make it clear that they want to be a full partner with this new administration and what that means.
I think that this is Tarsu. I think that demobilization is a very significant issue, and I hope that we'll have a chance to talk about that more directly. In terms of some lowlights, however, in the first 100 days of this administration, I think because in this country, economic opportunity and racial justice are so inextricably linked, I think we must say that the bank bailout, especially in combination with what I consider a disastrous non-response to home foreclosures, has been a tremendous disappointment emanating from the first 100 days of the administration. Maybe a tie with this, I would put Janet Napolitano's apparent endorsement of the previous administration's national security doctrine of domestic violent radicalization and her endorsement of racial profiling for national security. This is really something that's come out of the Bush Department's FBI under Mueller, who stayed on under the Obama administration. But a quick note on this point, because I think these are issues that may be less well known to racial justice organizers and advocates. These policies that really are the center of attention for the civil liberties community finger many of us, even on this call, as potential terrorists because of our association with social justice movements, universities, mosques, certain nationalities, of course, and so on. So we, on the one hand, as Hemi has alluded to, we may see some positive movement out of the Justice Department, for instance, on issues like racial profiling legislation this fall. But we also need to be vigilant for national security exceptions so broad as to allow much racial profiling to continue.
If I could just add something to that answer, talking about the bailout for the banks, that we haven't as a community paid much attention to that at all, and that's really been the big money coming out to do something about the economy. So I do think the combination of areas becoming front and center that have not been our traditional areas and what has actually happened does raise some concern. We're talking about $7 trillion going to the banking industry. What about the unbanked? What about those who were hit first and hardest by the foreclosure? And what about the lack of money available for loans and entrepreneurs? I think there's still a lot of work to be done in that arena.
Deepa? Yeah, and I would just kind of add a little bit to Tarso's points on national security as well. I think that, you know, we were hoping to see some rhetoric and language that relates to the civil rights violations of South Asian Muslim and Arab American communities since 9/11 who were targeted, detained, denied due process through various policies and practices that were endorsed by government agencies. And I think that, you know, what we'd like to see and what we didn't really see over the past 100 days is some language about how far this administration will go to investigate and to look into those policies and practices. And also there's a greater need for accountability that I think many people have already talked about when it comes to the issue of the torture memos that were released recently, which demonstrated the legal support was given to the Bush administration to authorize severe interrogation techniques. So many of these issues around national security are issues that I don't think were addressed as squarely as we had hoped that they would be.
So I want to get back to those issues, but first, I want to talk a little bit more about the economic issues. You know, as been noted just a few seconds earlier, we've had high foreclosure rates and rising unemployment and non-existent banking accounts in communities of color for a long time now. This is, for people of color, this economic crisis isn't a recent thing. So what has been the evidence for us in this first 100 days, knowing that 100 days does not mean that we'll see everything that's going to be done, but what's been the evidence and some policy moves or rhetoric that signals to us that Obama is going to address some longstanding disparity issues around issues of the economy? You know, with the stimulus package, there's been a lot of talk, for instance, about really moving forward around green economy and green jobs. You know, so there's a question around how do we, you know, make sure that those jobs get targeted to our communities. Are there other pieces of evidence that we've seen that these things are indeed going to get where the need is the highest and oftentimes gets missed?
Well, this is Angela again, and I'm going to repeat something I said, and you will find it a recurring theme. 100 days is a short period in any presidency. It is a very short period in a presidency that started with all the crises that this one did. This was an amazing beginning in terms of the economy completely falling apart, but that not being the only problem needing to be addressed. I have seen lots of evidence from appointments, from statements that have been made, from the stimulus package, the budget, which is so important. We didn't even mention the budget, putting out a budget that as a moral document that sets the principles for how we want to go forward. That was a pretty amazing budget with a focus on education, health, and energy, with lots of room within all of those to address the issues that need to be addressed in our community. But this 100-day period, to me, has really shown that we need to get organized as communities of color. We need to educate ourselves about issues, some of which are complex, some of which are new. We need to be in all of the discussions that are happening in Washington and out in our communities. We need to organize a voice. We shouldn't be silent. When something good happens, there needs to be a big yell of approval. And when something bad happens, we need to let it be known that this isn't acceptable and have alternative plans and think them through. Just take the stimulus package again. You have the weatherization money in there, and you have the retrofitting that can be used to create jobs and opportunities in communities of color. But it won't happen And if we don't make sure that that money gets translated well, we need for these jobs to be good jobs that lead to careers, that allow people to be able to support their families, not a three-week weather stripping position that no preparation and nothing to do afterwards. That's just a little example among many. So my view is there's lots of potential to do things, but we have to both translate that potential, which takes advocacy, but we need a unified mobilization to be able to push, because we now have a president who I think wants to be pushed.
Well, this is Tarso again, and I do think that I agree with Angela that there needs to be more of a push, particularly around issues at the intersection of race and the economy, with a broad agenda that can unite multiple sectors of the working class across race. And partly this is a matter of holding the Obama administration accountable, and partly this is also an important strategic issue for us in terms of not ceding this ground around the economy to our opposition, many of whom are racist and elitist organizers who have already begun to try to sow the ground for a campaign attacking the Obama administration around, for instance, the bank bailout. There's a kind of gamble on the part of the right that the economy will not rebound in the near term and that there'll be an opportunity to build a base that becomes politically significant of right-wing economic anger and populism. The silence of communities of color, of the left, the lack of mobilization on issues related to the economy leaves a vacuum, and we saw that with the tea parties, which may have seemed laughable, and I think we were right to ridicule them on the one hand. On the other hand, we need to take them seriously as a trial balloon of an infrastructure that our opponents are trying to build and are biding their time. Right now, they have the disadvantage that Obama remains so popular, but they're gambling against Obama if the economy won't rebound in the near term. So what are some elements of that? I do think that coming back to this issue of foreclosure policy is critical. I think it's a mistake that the Obama administration hasn't, for instance, declared a moratorium on foreclosures. The policy that they have come up with, I think, is widely understood to have benefited a very, very small, really a handful of people. And so that needs to be revisited and revisited in aggressive terms. I also think that in addition to foreclosures, we need to look at federal labor law reform, for instance, under the Employee Free Choice Act. That should be part of this discussion. And this may not typically seem like a racial justice issue, but the ability of workers to form unions without going through an NLRB election would radically transform the economic reality of low-wage workers, among whom people of color are wildly overrepresented. So let's be honest. So far, and Angela pointed to this, although with I think more encouraging words about the Obama administration than perhaps you're hearing from me, this administration has found enormous money for banks, but not so much for workers and homeowners of color and their poor white counterparts. And I'm not saying this, and we need to be careful not to position ourselves in ways that weaken the Obama administration or, on the other hand, marginalize ourselves by moving into the opposition. On the other hand, part of our challenge with Obama is that he's not a radical, certainly not a leftist, and his record on racial justice will ultimately and inevitably disappoint so long as he remains unwilling to be more aggressive in tackling inequalities built into the U.S. economy. So that's a criticism of the Obama administration, but it's also a rallying cry to those of us on this call and the organizations and movements of which we are part in terms of some of the places where I think we need to focus our energies.
Just to add to that just a little bit, this is Deepa. I think that, you know, given what Tarso is saying, that the administration doesn't necessarily have a race equity frame in terms of these issues, I agree with Angela that, you know, it is really incumbent upon us to insert that racial equity frame into various issues that the country is addressing. Some of this doesn't really make it to the level of national dialogue or to the policy level, but even in the case of the economy, I think that's important to talk about how the economic crisis is weakening the web of interdependency that immigrants have with one another, what's the impact in terms of even remittances, and what's the impact on other countries outside of the U.S. I think that it's important for all of us as racial justice advocates to raise these issues with the administration and at the media level, because I do agree with Angela that there is an opening now that we didn't have before where these issues will actually get heard.
Okay.
I do agree about the notion about the Employee Free Choice Act and other areas that we ought to be very aggressive about picking up on. There are lots of openings. And the sad part is with this, what I think is pretty amazing leadership at multiple levels in government, it's happening at a time of such extraordinary crisis where we already had terrible unemployment in our communities. I was talking to someone in Washington who was telling me that recent research they had been doing put the unemployment rate among black men in Detroit at 30%. And we're talking unemployment, which excludes those who have stopped looking or haven't looked in several months. And so when you think about how hard it is in some of these communities, one of the areas where I think the administration could do a better job is to help provide some geographic focus and targeting. That even in the stimulus package, not to mention in other things that might happen, places like Detroit and St. Louis and other places, there ought to be some incentive as money goes out to those states through the recovery package to make sure that it gets targeted to communities that have historically been left behind and have been hit worst and first by this new slump.
Well, you know, this really brings me to a question about strategy within the progressive community. For just a moment, let's leave the review of the Obama administration on the side and talk about when we talk to each other, whether it's at a strategy meeting, at a conference or a summit, you know, there's always, you know, and here at the Applied Research Center, we experience this through our entire 26-year history, this pushback that now is not the time to move a racial equity agenda, that, you know, we're in a time of crisis, everyone is suffering, we finally have a real shot. And, you know, here at ARC, we've heard this before. We've elected a good leader. This is a point of urgency. We're about to really move some good policy. So now is not the time to talk about putting in special structures that would eliminate disparities or that would target communities of color in any meaningful way. You know, how do we begin to respond to this? How do we make sure that there is this mandate that comes from up and out, that he gets to hear that? So it's not just about what Obama wants to do, but what the mandate is about coming from us is around racial equity. How do we have that conversation within our own movement?
I think, Tammy, this is Tarso again, I think that because the economy is really front and center at this moment, it's one of the reasons why I've called on this call so far for really thinking about the intersection of race and the economy. I think that it's not only is that necessary, I think it's impossible to achieve racial justice in this country without taking economic reform very seriously, but I also think that this is the moment in which that intersection is particularly important, and in order to be engaged in a dialogue that's going to resonate broadly for the residents of this country right now, we need to be addressing the economy. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there. Keying up on off of something that Angela was just talking about, you know, some have called for, I'm thinking of Bill Fletcher Jr. and others, have called for a Marshall Plan for cities in the United States. And I'm in favor of that kind of approach. I think Angela's exactly right. There are ways we can think about geographic targeting that will have tremendous benefit for the most economically marginalized in this country, including communities of color. Related to that, I do think we need to start fresh. I think this administration needs to start afresh with Katrina and not treat it like Bush's torture policy that Deepa was referring to a moment ago as water under the bridge or maybe over the dike that we're not willing to revisit. I think we have to revisit that. So I think those are some places to start. And when I talk about a strategy that brings, as Deepa was saying, sort of a racial equity or racial justice frame, I think that doing it around the economy, it means having an economic analysis that's inflected and informed by a racial and gender justice analysis and seeking proposals that can unite multiple sectors of the working class because of the broad-scale economic benefits that can be derived from some of these policies. And here's an example that relates to gender. More women in this country have access to health care as a result of union membership than by virtue of having earned a college degree. So we need to take this seriously. We need to take very seriously what comes along with a targeted economic justice strategy aimed at the most marginalized and most disadvantaged sectors of the American populace. It would affect immigrant communities. It would affect African-American and Latino and poor Asian and Native American communities. We need to think about that in terms of creating economic opportunity. And as Angela was saying, I'm thinking about how we do this in a structured way. Not to suggest, as maybe some of my remarks could be interpreted, that that unions are the only approach to this, but how are, in fact, retrofitting jobs, for instance, around home energy conservation, how are we going to avoid those being flashed in the pan kind of jobs for 3 months or 4 months? There needs to be a career track. How does one create a career track? I know that these are issues that groups across the country are struggling with. I'm associated with some in Massachusetts who are working on this right now and figuring out ways to get poor, urban, Latino and African American youth into a job training apprenticeship programs with unions that will then hopefully guarantee them or put them in a better chance of being in a long-term, higher wage earning occupation, as opposed to finding themselves in a situation where suddenly the initial boom of the stimulus money has run out and we're back to last hired, first fired. These are the very pragmatic kinds of questions we need to think about.
I agree.
Angela,
totally.
I know that your Equity Now project is doing some of that work on the ground, at least here in California, around making sure that there are equity principles that are moving forward as people are moving some of these stimulus package monies that are coming to the states as people are addressing that, right, your
yes.
Equity Now project?
Yes, as Policy Link has been very involved in making sure that local advocates know what's in the stimulus package and to have access to the best ideas about how to make it work for those who really need the support. And the example of the weatherization and the retrofit is classic, but also trying to make sure that transportation dollars also get into public transit and how to create a voice and a demand for that. And there's some dollars that are still left at the federal level that will be competitive grants. So the states will have to compete to get money. There's $1.5 billion in transportation. And there we still have a chance to say target this on public transit and target it in places where we really need it. I'd encourage people to go on policylink.org and look at what's there. But I wanted to comment on your opening question about whether this is the time to push the racial equity agenda.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we do ourselves a disservice when we treat the racial equity agenda as a special interest, rather than acknowledging that the agenda that we have called racial equity has become the agenda that will help the nation to prosper and to be able to actually sit competitively in the global economy. 2042 is the magic number. By that time, we will be a nation in which the majority of people are people of color. It's happened in over 300 counties already. California and other places are already experiencing this. An economy will not thrive if it wastes the majority of the people who are there. So the nation has every reason to be concerned about how do we build a fully inclusive economy in which everybody is able to participate and prosper. And those are the questions of let's target the places that are being left behind, that people who live in places like Detroit and East St. Louis and other places are left behind because the places where they live have inadequate infrastructure. So the targeting discussion is not just a racial equity discussion. It's how do you make a whole region competitive. When you talk about getting people involved in jobs that lead to careers and good salaries, we're talking about how as a nation the Social Security system continues to function. How as a nation we have people who are able to contribute and work and actually build a strong economy. So this is not the time to step back because we're in economic crisis and say we need to put the racial equity agenda on the back burner. It's the time to bring it forward because the racial equity agenda is America's agenda if it wants to be a viable nation into the 21st century.
Okay. I would just echo that. I think that, you know, we really cannot silo these issues in these discrete buckets and wait until crises to pass before we start talking about and looking at these issues through a class, gender, and race analysis. Even immigration, you know, I don't think that we need to not talk about immigration or immigrants when we're talking about the economy. It's absolutely reasonable to talk about what does does immigration reform do? Could it actually revitalize the economy? So I don't think that we can afford to wait until this crisis passes before we start talking about the other, you know, the class, gender, race, immigration issues as well.
That really gets me to my next question. Go ahead, Tarso.
I was just going to very quickly, Tammy, that, you know, many have commented on sort of the audacity of the Obama administration's domestic policy agenda. It would be ironic if a sitting president were more audacious in his goals for this country than the social justice movements of which we're all a part. So I think this is the time to think big. It's the time to be bold. It's the time to be strategic, but to think big and demand a lot. I think we need to be strategic about how we frame these issues. And again, I keep bringing up that really looking at this intersection of race and the economy, because I think that's where the minds of the country are, not around race, but around the economy. But I, you know, I'm reminded of Nina Simone's song. You know, they keep telling us to go slow, and you know, there's no time like the present.
All right. Well, once again, I want to remind people to send their questions to contact@arc.org. And in a moment here, I'm going to start taking questions from our participants. But Deepa brought up the immigration question, and I think we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that Friday we're going to witness massive immigration rights marches across the country. While Obama says he favors comprehensive immigration reform, he's keeping his cards pretty close to his chest on some of the details. So I'd like a little bit of feedback about what people think, how people think he's done in that issue so far, and thoughts about if you had one discrete policy recommendation to make in that area, what would it be?
Well, I can start us off if that's okay. This is Deepa.
Go right ahead.
And Tammy, you mentioned May Day that's coming up this Friday, where individuals around the country will be out to support immigrant workers. And just for folks on the call, if you're interested in supporting those and coming out, you can find more information at anewdayforimmigration.org. So going back to the question about comprehensive immigration reform, I think that folks that have been looking forward to immigration reform have welcomed the signals that President Obama has been sending of late in terms of beginning a dialogue on the issue. He met with members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus in early April, and at a meeting at the Summit of the Americas recently, he reiterated his interest in moving a package forward. In fact, at the summit, he heard from the heads of nations, such as Guatemala, El Salvador, and others, about how the flawed U.S. immigration system has had an impact on their countries, their economies, and essentially there are neighbors in this part of the world. So with President Obama, again, indicating his interest at the summit as well and seeing the links when it comes to borders and migration policy and the impact on other countries as well as what's happening here in ours, I think these are welcome signals that we're seeing. In addition, as I mentioned at the beginning, Secretary Napolitano is reviewing several different policies, from the impact of raids to 287G agreements and detention conditions, taking a look at how these have been implemented over the past 8 years. So I think these are positive signals, again, from the administration that we received in the first 100 days. And as someone else had said earlier, I think we really need to see what happens over the summer and into the fall when, you know, folks believe that a legislative package will actually be up for debate and see where the president is going to be on that. In terms of a discrete policy change that you asked about, Tammy, I think that, you know, there are so many that that folks are interested in seeing an administrative fix for, but one that I can just point out very quickly is around the 287G agreements and terminating them or investigating them. And I think that that would go a long way in changing what enforcement looks like at the local level. And these 287G agreements, for folks who might not know on the call, are agreements between the Department of Homeland Security and local, state, and law enforcement, where the program effectively deputizes cops to act as immigration agents and allows them to make civil immigration arrests. And what has happened in places like Davidson County in Tennessee or Maricopa County in Arizona is that it often leads to rampant racial profiling. It leads to sweeps of day laborers and workers. And this is a program that, you know, we believe is very important to review and to hopefully terminate as well. So I'll stop here a bit. Can definitely answer more questions on immigration as we move forward.
I'd like to ask you a question, Deepa. This is Tarso. I'm wondering, in terms of the prospects for, you know, a meaningful, comprehensive immigration reform package coming out of this administration, one of the things it seems to me that over the last several years, the right wing has so dominated this debate that what now looks like reasonable legislation may be fairly distorted. You know, it may be the sort of what some critics would say, the sort of 80% to 90% punitive bill with a sort mm-hmm. of a sort of path to citizenship for some. That was on the table, for instance, in 2007-2008, which was scuttled, actually, by the right because it wasn't extreme enough. They didn't, you know, they wanted to build the border fence first on sort of an Israeli security fence model. They wanted to amend the 14th Amendment of the Constitution in order to eliminate birthright citizenship. And so since those things weren't, you know, part of the provision, they scuttled it. You know, my question is there a danger that Obama might actually pull off a CIR bill and maybe even seem heroic in that, but end up with a policy that would fall well short of what we might call racial justice? And what mm-hmm. do you think are our best prospects in this moment, in this climate?
Well, I think that's always an option that's on the table, right, that it's never – I don't think anyone believes that CIR will really be everything that – folks want it to be in terms of meeting the components of CIR itself. One thing that President Obama has said is that he's not actually sure that there's going to be a bill that gets signed this year. I think that he's basically signaled an interest in looking at a package and moving a package forward. Much of it also depends on what's happening in Congress, where what we've seen so far are more piecemeal approaches to immigration reform. So there are bills around family reunification, or there are bills around detention conditions, but we haven't yet seen kind of a full package emerge. I think that some of the questions for the immigrant rights movement will really be the questions around, you know, can we get behind a bill that is more heavy on enforcement, on militarization of the border, on some of those issues that you brought up, Tarso, and, you know, a quote, earned path to legalization that is punitive at some level. Are we going to get behind that in order to get legalization? Period, right? And so those are conversations I think that folks in the immigrant rights movement are having, and there are campaigns afoot already in terms of getting the field to organize around aspects of immigration reform. But I think that the danger with this frame is the comprehensive part. I mean, we're not going to get everything that we want. What are the compromises and what are the negotiations, and will it look different than it did 2 years ago or not? I think that the prospect of it looking different, the prospects are there, because I do think that with this new administration, that we do have some openings. But while there is potential, I think we'll have to see what happens over the next few months. And it'll also depend a lot on how our communities kind of turn out and how we push this issue forward.
I want to jump in and Angela, did you want to comment? Or?
All I wanted to say is that this is, again, an area where we really need to have more strong collaboration. That I was part of a Black Latino summit that was held in Los Angeles. About 500 Black and Latino organizational leaders came, and immigration was a lot of what we talked about. And it's clear that there is an opening to be able to really get the Black community involved in really being a strong, supportive voice around this issue. The Black Alliance for Just Immigration, Phil Hutchins, Eva Patterson, and the work that she's been doing with the Equal Justice Society, sponsoring important dialogues around this issue, the work that the Burns Institute has been doing around juveniles and the issues of immigration. I think that we need to invest even more. I hope that on Friday there's going to be lots of participation from African American and other communities, because this is an area in which I think people are looking for a consensus around what ought to be the call, and really bringing in people who could be real allies to help make sure that people aren't standing alone on this one, but standing with many other people who care about the issue.
Wonderful. I want to bring in a question from one of our participants, Maddie Ress, who's the director of Campus Camp Wellstone Action. Can you ask the panelists to talk about how to mediate, strategize around the schisms sometimes that occur between labor and community organizations on the issues of green jobs and implementation? There are other ways to align ourselves so we're not competing against each other for the money and the jobs and the interests. I think that's a very real question, because although many of us have been involved in labor community collaborations that have worked well. There's definitely been those that have not worked so well, especially when it comes to the trades in some of these jobs. So has there been some thinking that people want to share around this?
And there have been even other places where people haven't even tried. I think this is an area where we need to really invest in some demonstrations, and using the money that's come with the recovery package is a wonderful place to do that. There is a big coalition of community and labor, community development organizations that have come together under the banner of Emerald Cities to actually look at how to be able to demonstrate how labor and community can work together to make sure that these jobs in retrofitting and weatherization are good jobs that do just the kinds of things we've been talking about on this call. But let's not kid ourselves. We have a history to overcome, and we have a lot of hard work to do. And I think that we ought to be identifying places where labor has demonstrated, particularly the trades, have demonstrated that they're willing to work in a different way. We need to work in those places, show what can be done, and then lift it up. That is the motto of PolicyLink, lifting up what works. We like to find a place where it's working and then help others to see it so that those examples can guide what's happening going forward. And the green jobs arena is one where this ought to be our moment to be able to show that these two communities can support each other. They need each other, and here's a way that they can work together.
I agree with Angela that looking at what experiments have actually produced some results. She mentioned the Emerald Cities Project. I would also encourage folks to take a look at Community Labor United, which is a coalition based in the metro area of Boston, Massachusetts, which has done some interesting projects in the past involving community-based organizations like Youth Build and trades, as Angela was pointing out, around apprenticeship programs for youth getting into the painters and other construction trades. So there has been some very valuable experimentation that's happened that I think can be built on, and I also share Angela's sense of realism and caution about how difficult this is. It really is difficult, and this is the roll up your sleeves moment. And so, looking at Emerald Cities, Angela, is there any other place that you would send people to in terms of websites or other places that people could check out for models?
I would also go to Green for All. Green for All's website definitely has something on it. Is that what you were saying? Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go to the ARC 100-day webpage, we actually have under our action steps a link to Green for All and other groups that are doing some actions around labor and other issues if people are interested. We have another question from participants who want us to talk a little bit more about international affairs, and particularly the U.S. boycotting of the U.N. Conference Against Racism, what we think about that. And, I want to broaden it out in terms of our role as a global partner or not, and what that means in terms of not only the foreign policy but even domestic policy, how people see other folks from other parts of the world. Really does impact our immigration policy. It impacts our employment policy. So, foreign policy isn't foreign, right? And when Obama goes elsewhere representing the U.S. and our stance, how he represents us in terms of a traditional representation of domination or having what he's calling a new era of diplomacy, whether that happens makes a big difference. But particularly on this UN Conference Against Racism, do people have some response to that? I have to say that I was particularly disappointed. I felt that he, with his stance around this is going to be a new era of diplomacy, that finally if he can stand here in the U.S. behind a podium and talk about race, that he should be able to stand anywhere in the world and talk about race and the legacy that we have and to really shift that discussion in a proactive way for the U.S. would have been something of a major signal to the rest of the world that we are serious about being a global partner in a very different way. His engagement in the Summit of the Americas was a good thing. So I think he's kind of split the hairs there. He gave a nod no one way and a nod yes the other.
I think that, Tammy, this is Deepa. I think that it's really important for this administration to also start talking about issues related to human rights and to use a human rights frame when we are opening up these dialogues with other nations. You know, I think that in terms of diplomacy, we've seen some positive tone setters, as I said earlier on, the interviews and the statements made in Turkey, sort of opening it up to the Muslim world. On the other hand, you know, the Afghanistan-Pakistan initiatives that have been taken of late seem to be along the same trajectory as Bush, and I know that for many South Asian communities here in the U.S., there's a little bit of a sense of alarm when we hear the rhetoric around Pakistan. So I think that there's a little bit of this and a little bit of that, kind of like you said, but, you know, that while the diplomacy piece, I think, is positive and going to these various summits and traveling, I do think that we need to see some more rhetoric along the human rights frame. I do think that we need to see a little bit of change in the rhetoric when it comes to countries like Afghanistan and Pakistan. Otherwise, I think folks are going to feel that it is a little bit like Bush Light, which I think is what you all have identified as well in your analysis at ARC.
Mm-hmm. I would just add, Tammy, a little bit here. I think that the Obama administration is playing a very difficult game around positioning the president on issues related to racial justice. And as I said at the top of this call, it's ironic in some ways even to be having this discussion about racial justice initiatives in relation to administration that is that assiduously avoids using that frame in many instances. I think that's part of what was playing out in the boycott. I think also this, of course, relates to the administration's sense of Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And we haven't, before Deepa's mentioned just now of U.S. policy towards Afghanistan and Pakistan, and where, you know, we're using drone aircraft that are bombing targets, including civilians, unfortunately. We haven't talked really about U.S. foreign policy as it relates to racial justice here. And I think it's a very large question how the Obama administration is going to position itself in relationship to the Israeli occupation of occupied Palestinian territories. And it's getting late for the administration to send a signal on that. If, in fact, the administration is serious about making contributions there, it needs to step up. I think in some ways the boycott of the UN conference is a step backwards. I guess we're waiting to see if there's another shoe that's going to drop, whether that's being done in part in anticipation of making some sort of announcement.
One last go-around. Andrew is exactly right. You know, 100 days isn't a lot of time to kind of judge the whole worth of any policy action. But I do know, at least at my job, you know, you got 3 months, and then you have your 3 months review to check in to see how things are going so you can recalibrate before you go any further. So I do think it is a good check-in moment for us, not only in terms of how the Obama administration is doing, but how we as the progressive movement are doing and trying to move a progressive agenda. So just as the last round robin here, I'd like each one of you to give a letter grade to the Obama administration and maybe one thing that you would like to see move forth coming for the rest of the year of 2009.
Well, I'll start. When I was a student, I always hated to receive a letter grade. I never thought it actually reflected what I was doing, what I was learning, and what I was experiencing. And so since I hated to get it, I'm not going to give it. But I will say that democracy is an iterative process. And however things are happening, when you have a government in that is open to and listening to our ideas, if it's not living up to our expectations, we need to check what it is that we're sending back into it. And while I think that the beginning has been a surprising beginning, especially coming off of what we experienced before, we can do better than we are doing, and it's up to us, those of us who are close to the ground, we know what the needs are, we see what the opportunities could be, to be organized, to be studious in terms of learning how our aspirations translate into policy and building the broad coalition that then follow through, send thanks when thanks are deserved, send critiques when critiques are needed, and send good ideas when they clearly are in need of good ideas.
All right.
This is Tarsu, and I may be slightly more critical of the performance of the Obama administration in the first 100 days than Angela, but I couldn't agree with her more in that we might just as well be talking about our first 100 days as Obama's. And, you know, there's been a lot of international press, and even press in the United States, about the lack of mobilization in the United States in response, for instance, to the global economic crisis that this country has produced. So it's particularly ironic, particularly in comparison to mobilizations underway in many other countries around the world. And so to the extent in this country that there's been mobilization, it's not mostly been by our folks. I think Angela's right to point out that there is large and in some ways unprecedented access to this administration, certainly compared to recent memory of presidential administrations, and we need to do a better job taking advantage of that. In terms of, Tammy, areas for action, we've identified so many on this call, and probably many of us have a longer list of things that we didn't get to, but, you know, keying off something Deepa said, I would say, you know, terminating the 287G program. I would also say really, really addressing the foreclosure crisis in a serious way. And as for grades, you know, if I had to give a grade, I think I would be strategic. I would want to encourage the student. I might give a B plus because there's better work to do, and I know that this particular pupil would like to get an A and is accustomed to getting those. So that might be the way to encourage some dialogue about what still needs to be done.
All right.
Tammy, Deepa, I grew up in India where we actually never received those letter grades, so I'm going to resist that as well. I will say that I think that the performance has been above average, and just a few things that I wanted to mention quickly. I believe, at least from my vantage point in working with Asian and South Asian American communities here in the U.S., that there is a real sense of optimism and urgency that folks feel in terms of taking advantage of the access, taking advantage of the openings for policy change. So I actually think there has been mobilization. I think there have been a lot of dialogues and conversations, at least from where I sit, and people are ready to engage with this administration. Secondly, I think that we need to make sure that those who have gone into the administration, you know, from Attorney General Holder, Tom Perez, Harold Coe, Gary Locke, Hilda Solis, these are some folks who are either already there or in the process of being confirmed, are folks who do have a racial equity lens, and they represent the possibility for us to engage them in conversation and dialogue, opportunities that were much harder to come by over the past 8 years. And then the final point that I would mention is that in terms of openings or pieces of reform that we're looking forward to when it comes to the administration, we're looking forward to an end to racial and religious profiling. That's going to be a key ask for us. We're looking to see whether or not there will be a change or investigation of policies that were implemented after 9/11 that had an impact on certain communities of color, and obviously around immigration. You know, I think those are the three main issues for some Asian American communities and South Asian communities that we're looking forward to advancing with our allies over the next few months and years.
Well, I certainly do highly respect my panelists' revolutionary resistance to giving grades. That's really kind of cool, actually. And I want to thank all of you for speaking today. This was a great conversation. I also want to encourage those of you participants to please go and check out our Race and Review webpage at arc.org. Of arcs assessment, and really the thing that we have as well is it really is about what we do here. It is a review of our action and of our work. And finally, just to briefly remind us all why we feel that this work is so important, you know, the Compact for Racial Justice actually does lay out the vision of the world that we're fighting for. And for those of you who haven't read it, I just want to share that vision with you through a brief passage from the Compact's preamble. We could not ask for a social political context more in need of our ability to name our full vision. We deserve and demand a society that rejects the pessimism of unending racial conflict and embraces the optimism of a human community firmly anchored in justice and mutuality. Nothing could be more affirming of our individual and collective worth than our work to create a country where the needs of our children are fully met so they can thrive and develop their unique gifts to contribute to the common good. A commitment to internationally recognized human rights at home and abroad that structures our partnerships in a community of nations. An unwavering practice of justice and equity overcomes the centuries-old divisions of dominance and privilege along the color line. The global migration of humans is understood as a fundamental feature of our age, and all workers are compensated and routinely protected wherever their place of birth is. People choose partners, create families, and build households free from arbitrary discriminatory limitations based on gender, sexual identity, or birth relations. The structural barriers to political participation are removed, creating an electoral process uncorrupted by the power of private wealth and ensuring that government decision-making is accessible to all people. And the safety net is rewoven so its strongest cords of generosity, a spirit towards vicissitudes of the human condition, and a recognition that no one deserves to live in desperation. The outlandish apportionment of public funds to militarism is diverted to address the climate and energy crisis, rebuild neglected infrastructure, and meet human needs. And we respect and celebrate the rich diversity of belief, language, and cultural practices that constitute the national fabric. It is up to us to rally our considerable resources and place them in the service of building this society. So this is why we have the Compact for Racial Justice. This is why we have these conversations. And this is why I really value the time we spend together to build this country. Thank you for your time, and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.